This is Winning with ADHD, a podcast for parents to empower students. Build up your ADHD teens so that they recognize their own talents, creativity, and uniqueness. Get tips and tricks to help overcome executive functioning challenges. Listen to stories and experiences of what worked and what did not. Together, let's find ways to build your child's self-esteem and start winning with ADHD. And now, here's your host, Heather Walker.
Hi, parents. I'm Heather Walker, and I'm the host of the podcast Winning with ADHD. For the month of August, we're going to talk about time vulnerability. This is a great topic as we are all getting back into the swing of school and everybody's starting to get homework assignments or have a little bit more scheduled environment that we've compared to what we've had over the summer months. So what is time vulnerability? This is just the inability to be able to measure the amount of time it will take to complete a task, whether it be that you underestimate how long it will take or overestimate how long something will take you to accomplish. I've watched this happen time and time again with our daughter, Emily, and we've learned a few things along the way. One thing that I would know as a parent is that this is kind of like a continual process. It's a long-term game, not a short-term game. And you will start to see your child be able to win in some of these areas and then other days not be able to do as well. And so just take that to heart. Know that that is a realistic expectation that we will see improvements, but it won't necessarily be consistent and applied to every situation because there's so many different factors that come into play with time vulnerability in particular. So let me share a story. When Emily was little, we were first learning about ADHD and what it is that we could do to create more success within our lives and reduce friction within our home, et cetera. I was complaining, I guess you could say, to doctors or teachers and those around me about how she was unable to clean her room, that she would go into her room and she would start cleaning. And hours later, I would come back and nothing would have happened. If anything, it actually got worse, not better. And for anybody who's ever cleaned a space knows that it typically can get worse before it gets better. But this isn't that type of situation where, you know, you've dug everything out of the closet and you've now organized it and you're getting ready to put it back into the closet. It didn't look like that at all. Rather, it was that things were pulled out of everywhere and she was neatly organizing all of her colored pencils by color, by brand, by whatever else, to be able to put them back into the drawer organized. And she oftentimes would feel incredibly accomplished and super proud of what she had done in being able to get the colored pencil drawer just immaculate and perfect and organized and all of the things. I, however, felt completely different about the situation and was like, you know, I didn't really care about the colored pencils and how they were organized, but really what I cared about was the dirty clothes and the clean clothes all over the floor. And what could we do to, you know, get it to where we could walk in the room? And so this is definitely, you know, a misalignment of priorities between her and myself, but also an inability for her to be able to prioritize what's most important to be able to accomplish the task or the project of cleaning her room. But as parents, we can be kind of vague about that. And for those with ADHD, they don't naturally have the ability to create the process and the steps needed to accomplish a task, and definitely not being able to prioritize what is of the utmost importance versus it'd be nice to have. And so this carries over into schoolwork and as they get older into work. And so learning these skills are an incredibly valuable part of our growth path as human beings, but especially for those with ADHD. So what are some other examples of how time vulnerability could impact us. It could impact us in being able to determine how much time do we need for homework? How much time do we need to be able to get ready for school and get out the door on time? Those types of things. So let's see here. The inability to measure time, and whether you underestimate or overestimate, you can have a child who might always overestimate. They might always underestimate. Some of that can be because of their perception of their ability or capability to get something done in a certain amount of time. Sometimes this can be dependent upon the mood that they're in. If they're in a really good space and they're happy and just having a great time that day, they might underestimate because they feel good about themselves and they think they can get it done really quick and move on to the next thing. If they're in a less happy place, maybe they're currently in a state of depression or have some anxiety around things, they might expand that time. And then you would have a potentially a situation where they start to crumble or melt down, and maybe even enter into a freeze state where they're unable to move or take any type of action. So clearly we want to eliminate both scenarios in regards to time vulnerability. We hopefully want our kids to be happy more often than not, but regardless of what situation they're in, we don't want to overestimate the time and we don't want to underestimate the time. We want to kind of bring it in a little bit closer to being kind of on point. So if they constantly overestimate time, or if you've seen situations where they've done it, maybe they don't do it all the time, what we can do is we can start to track how long does it typically take us. So if, for example, they say, I think it's going to take me 3 hours to fold my laundry. And you say, well, in the past, I've noticed with about a similar sized pile of clothes that it takes you about a half an hour to fold them and take them upstairs to your room and put them away in your drawers. Maybe we should try and see if we can accomplish this task in 30 minutes. So in that situation, what you're doing is you're modeling what you've seen in the past on about how long something takes, but you're also breaking down the steps that they need to take. And by doing this, you're able, what they're able to do is they're able to start hearing the steps that you're saying and what is required and expected of your ask. So if we go back to my original story, when Emily was a little girl, I just said, clean your room. I didn't say, hey, will you pick up the dirty clothes and put them in the laundry basket? Will you fold the clean clothes and put them in your, in the drawers that they belong in? And will you put your toys in the bin? If I had said that, we might have had a very different situation. Is it likely that she would have been distracted by the colored pencils? Yes, that is also very likely to have happened. But the project would have been far more clear and something that she would be able to follow with three simple steps. Now, does that also mean that she wouldn't walk into her room and see the magnitude of the amount of dirty clothes and clean clothes on her floor and melt down? That is also absolutely possible. So one of the things that we've done in those types of situations is we have sat with her. So I'll either go in and start helping her clean her room, or I'll sit next to her and do something that I need to accomplish while she's working on her room, providing some direction and redirects, maybe giving some advice or noticing how she's responding to the situation. Some of the best things that I've learned about watching Emily accomplish projects is I can see where she starts to get stuck. And then I notice a pattern. And then when I see that in the future, I can take note of that and I can help her faster. So over the years, I started to notice that when Emily gets overwhelmed or doesn't know how to take a next step, she might appear to look like she's busy, but she kind of stares off or doesn't really seem to be making any progress. Even with her sitting and working at a computer to accomplish schoolwork, I've started to be able to notice when things aren't quite going as well as we might like, where her productivity has started to shrink and she kind of wanders around a little bit. So, from a schoolwork perspective, what I've noticed is she'll get distracted by the homepage with the news. Maybe something around weather will catch her attention, and she'll kind of start to hyper focus on that and go down a rabbit hole. And so I can bring her back. Some of the less obvious ways that I've seen her kind of pause or freeze in the moment when she has a difficulty in being able to move forward is that she will kind of scroll up and down on the screen, or she'll start to doodle on her page. Or sometimes she will even attempt to write out a plan, but it just starts out with one sentence and she doesn't really get much further than that. You'll start to notice with your own child some of these types of behaviors in different situations and be able to help them move through it faster. I think those, as a parent, that has been a rewarding experience for myself. I'm being able to learn those traits on how she shows up and to be able to help her move forward. In those situations, we tend to avoid a meltdown or having any type of high levels of emotion in either way, which is what I'm looking for, especially when we're trying to be productive and get things done. Clearly, having emotion when we're having fun or, playing or in recreational type of activities, a little bit different. But emotion typically surrounding getting something done is not something that I'm looking for, because it usually means that we're going to be derailed or have to work through a lot of feelings, and then that just exhausts her. So we definitely don't want to exhaust our kids through the emotions of getting things done, because what that does is it creates additional memories that they can think about on how it didn't go well in the past. We also need to remember that our ADHD kiddos remember the failures more than they remember the wins. I think that's kind of the case for most people, but this is definitely something that is more common in those with ADHD because of their time blindness, which is slightly different than this time vulnerability that we've talked about today. Because of time blindness, their ability to think back in the past or into the future is limited. And so, because of that, it's hard for them to recall situations where they've done well. They only recall the things where they've done poorly, which I am so sad that that is the kind of the world that their brain lives in, because they do incredible things. So, as parents, some of the things that we can do to help them with time vulnerability is keeping track of the times that they've won, keeping track of how long it's taken them to accomplish something and how they felt when they finished it. Another thing that I was told when Emily was younger was, we'll set a timer and say, you need to clean your room in 30 minutes. Now, I thought this was a great idea when I first got it, and there are some really great pieces to it. But what we learned was, by setting the timer and putting pressure on Emily, she froze and completely melted down. She attempted to clean her room, but in the process, she felt like there was no way that she could win, that she could get it done. And before she even really got started, she was in a full meltdown. And I was kind of in one myself, if we're being completely honest about how I felt in the moment. I was like, wait, she would spend hours in her room and not get it done. Now we set a timer and she doesn't even start. At least before, we had a clean colored pencil drawer, right? So what we've then learned is what I've talked about already, is being able to break down that task, but also potentially sitting with her while she cleans and helping direct her, creating that plan of, like, step one, I need you to, get rid of your dirty clothes. Step two, I need you to pick up your clean clothes. So maybe you even break it down a little bit further and say, I need you to pick up your clean pants and put them away. Okay, now I need you to pick up your clean shirts and put them away. What we've learned over time is that we may want to set a timer for those that handle being under pressure. We have a really good family friend. Their daughter responds incredibly well under pressure and tends to accomplish amazing amounts of things in an incredibly short amount of time due to procrastination and finally, hitting up against that deadline or that due date for schoolwork. Some people do really well in that situation. So start to pay attention to how your kid responds. If that's how they are, set a timer and make it a contest. Say, I'm setting a timer for 30 minutes. I need you to clean your room. These are the three main things that we need to see done. I'm going to go and clean the kitchen. Let's see who gets done first. So there's some things that you can do to help make it fun, but also accomplish the task. And then you can also see how does your child respond in these situations. With Emily, since she does not respond well to those types of things, some of the things, if you have a child that's like that, some of the things that you could do would be to set a timer for yourself to see how long is it taking when you outline what needs to be accomplished. I would also take note of what type of mood they're in. How has their day gone so far? Are they excited about something that's coming up? Another thing that we've learned with Emily is if she wants to go do something that's fun or exciting to her, and we need something done at home, she will fly through it. Now, sometimes she flies through it and doesn't do a great job, and we have to pull her back, and then there's emotion tied to that. But there's also a lot of good things of like she will accomplish the basics of getting her room clean if she wants to go out with friends or hang out with them. So take advantage of those opportunities when you have them, it to a good degree of a healthy boundary of that. Because we definitely don't want to deflate them and cause them to feel defeated so that they don't ever get to go out and do anything fun. Let's see here. Some of the other things that you could do is you could model time behaviors. You could say, I'm going to wash the dishes. I think it will take me 10 minutes. And if you say that in front of your child, it will help them to identify what you're doing as, an example to them on how they can start to measure time. And then when you're done doing the dishes, say, oh, look, it took me 15 minutes. I was off just a little bit. There again are tons of factors in how long something takes in cleaning the kitchen. You might have a pot that has some baked on food that you have to scrub a little bit harder. And other days, you might just have some plates that you need to wash. Clearly, a different set of tasks. The same thing goes for kids and, say, school assignments or cleaning their room. 10 addition problems might be really easy for your child versus 10 division problems. It could also have to do with where they are in the learning process. 10 division problems when you're first learning division is definitely going to take you longer than when you've been doing it for a few months and you start to feel a little bit more mastered in that assignment. So, let's talk about teaching them about measuring time and what that looks like. Once you get to, so I would say when you're in the elementary school age, it's more of the parent taking note of the time and the measurement, maybe even setting a certain amount of time to accomplish something. And let's just see how much you get done in that time. By the time that you get to the upper end of elementary school, depending on how your school system is structured, maybe that fifth, sixth grade, and then into middle school. We should start asking them to measure time. How long do you think that this will take? Okay, let's track that. Let's see what happens. Let's see how many problems we can get done in a half an hour. Some of that can be something that is also helpful for them to see an end to the amount of work that needs to be done. If we say we need to do homework and they feel overwhelmed by a full page of math problems, we can say, well, let's just see how much we can get done in a half an hour. At that point, there is an end to the work, and you'll get a lot of really good effort, or at times, you can get a lot of really good effort by setting a time limit. So, not just
to get everything done, but let's just see how far we get. One of the things that we did when Emily was younger, for math problems in particular, she'd come home with, a full page of math problems, 20, 30 problems on a page, and that would be overwhelming to her. So we would fold the piece of paper in half and say, let's work for a half an hour. Let's see if we can get, half a page done. We'll come to the other page later. So those are some of the ways that we can work with our child to help reduce overwhelm and anxiety around accomplishing tasks, but also bringing awareness to how long it takes us to finish a project or an assignment task, et cetera. The last piece that I think is important around time vulnerability is transition time. I've talked about this before, that transition time, or transitioning from one assignment to another or one task to another, can be difficult, and that we need to take that into account. So this becomes really important for measuring time associated with getting ready to get out the door, to leave on time, to get to school or to get to practice, or get to bed on time. Is the ability or the time that is needed to transition from one activity to another. So if you have somebody that is sitting on the couch playing a video game, watching TV, maybe texting with a friend, and you want them to get up and start getting ready for bed or completing chores or something like that, you're going from something that, like, in a resting state to something that's in a state of movement. First of all, that is a challenge. Second of all, you're going from something that is more enjoyable to something that's less enjoyable. And so the time frame that we need to transition might be greater. And in these situations, we just need to take note to start with. It's kind of like a science experiment. How long does it typically take? How many prompts did I give? Were they going from something fun to something they didn't enjoy? Or were they going from something they didn't enjoy to something fun? You will clearly see a difference in transition time, depending on which way you're going. But taking note of that is important and can help you build out, say, a morning routine and timetable. So you can take note of how long it typically takes them to eat breakfast and how long it typically takes them to move from the breakfast table to go to the bathroom to brush their teeth. And then come up with how long. How early do they need to get up to be able to accomplish all of those tasks? Transition time is important. It's like forgetting driving time when you say that you have a doctor's appointment at 3 o'clock, but you live a half an hour away. Clearly, you're going to need to leave 30 minutes before the appointment time if you want to be there on time. But if you don't take that into account, you're going to end up being 30 minutes late. And with ADHD, that shows up more and more to be able to have that transition time. Our daughter is in her late teens, and coming home when she says she is going to come home continues to be a challenge, because if we say you need to be home by 10, or she says she's going to be home by 10, her thought process is 10 o'clock. And so she actually doesn't end up leaving until 10 o'clock. So she's exhibiting this exact trait perfectly for her ADHD brain. So what are some of the things that we can do to help, shift that? So we can start talking about, instead of saying, well, you need to be home at 10 o'clock, what we need to start saying is, you need to leave by 9:30. Okay, you want to be home by 10, we need to leave by 9:30. So we normalize the leave time rather than the arrive time. And I think we can do that in multiple areas of life, depending on, what type of dynamic your family has and schedule you have. Okay, I think that is a good amount of information for the month of August on time vulnerability and some of the things that we can do to assist with it, some of the ways that it shows up, and ways that we can learn through it. Just as a final remark, is that this really is a learning process and is a long-term game in regards to learning how to respond and how to educate and provide a skill set. We've seen tons of success, and then we've also seen what feels like no progress whatsoever. But our daughter, who is taking online coursework, recently estimated an amount of time, and I actually questioned her and I was like, are you sure that's enough time? Like, you've just listed off all of these things. Are you sure you can get that accomplished? And she was like, yeah, I can totally do it. And she was spot on. And I was so proud of her. And then a few days later, she estimated some time, and I was like, okay, that seems like a really long amount of time. And I was right. And she had overestimated the amount of time that it would take to accomplish. That happens to everybody. So we just need to also remember that some of these things happen to everybody. It's just the severity and the frequency in which they happen for those with ADHD, and being able to help normalize the skill set that comes along with it. So having some patience and just being there as a support system is really the best thing that you can do. And if you notice, and when you start to notice the behaviors and the ways that they respond when they get stuck, can be some really good signs to help you create the most success possible. All righty. Well, we're in August. School has started for almost everybody. If you are like me, when school starts, you're kind of at this moment where you're still holding your breath to see how it's going to go and how your kids are going to interact with their teachers and their classmates. Maybe things are going really well for you right now, and you're kind of cautiously optimistic. Maybe some things have already fallen apart. Either way, I believe in you, and I know that each of you are working incredibly hard to help your child be as successful as they can, and helping them gain skills and tools and being able to work within our world. And so I'm here, I'm cheering you on, and I know that each of you are doing the best that you can do. Hopefully some of these tips and tricks, some of these stories that I've shared will provide you with some additional support, maybe some ideas on how you can help your kid. And just know that everybody's kid is different and everybody thinks about things differently. So if none of these work for you, but hopefully that's totally fine and is very possible. But really what I hope for you is that maybe it has sparked some ideas for you on how to be able to help your family the best that you can. Have a great August, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Winning with ADHD is brought to you by Disrupt ADHD. Head on to disruptadhd.com/learn more.